Good morning, church. Good morning. Well, Mark, I want to tell you that I was going to remember today. I really was going to remember Children's Church today. And in fact, while the kids were leaving, I was also going to remind parents that this evening from 4:30 to 5:30, Children's Choir for children first grade through sixth grade will be taking place. Now, there's two different groups. From 4:30 to 5:30 is the kids first through sixth grade, and from 5:30 to 6 is three-year-olds to kindergartners. And Pat Lutgemeier is going to be leading that group. Pat, where are you? Just if you're way back in the back. That's right. So if any parents, if you have any questions about that, you can ask Pat. I also want to let you know about a couple of opportunities for training events for service for Christian ministry. They're going to be coming up. We do a training event from time to time for people who are interested in starting or leading a ministry team. And here at First Church of God, if you have an idea for ministry that you would like to join together with a group of people to get done together, it could be anything. It could be starting a women's ministry or a men's ministry or an outreach into the community. We do a training event from time to time where we invite you together, and we're going to be doing that this Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon for people who would be interested in leading a ministry team and hopefully give you all the tools that you will need to know how to get going in that process. And also, this is a different thing. Please don't get these confused. We have a ministry called Christ Care Small Groups, which is groups of roughly 5 to 12 people who come together and really are on a journey of transformation together in a small group. We're going to begin a training event for people who would be interested in leading a Christ Care group. The training event is going to start a week from this coming Tuesday. And if you're interested in either of these events, I encourage you to sign up at the Welcome Center so that we can get back to you and give you more information about those. This morning, I would like to speak once again on the topic that we're considering over 6 weeks called Family Ties and Knots. And I'm asking you to think with me about our connections in families and these connections that are so important to us, but connections that are also easy to get bound up into knots that become real challenges for us. I heard recently about a group of ladies who took a little survey, and they were asked to respond to the things in their family for which they are the most grateful. And there were a few of them that had a pretty nice little sense of humor. For example, I liked the lady who said, "I'm really grateful for my husband, who is a handyman. He goes around the house fixing all the stuff that needs to be fixed, because when he's done, we always know that we need to call the plumber or the electrician in order to do it right." I have to say, I feel a little bit called to task on that particular one. I like the lady who said, "I'm really grateful for the new smoke alarms in the house to let my daughter know that the roast is finished on the days that she's cooking." And then I kind of appreciated the one who said, "I'm really grateful to have teenagers. They've given me the opportunity to learn a second language." And my personal favorite was the lady who said, "I am so grateful for well-behaved children who mind their manners and always put away their toys. I'm always sad when they go away to their own home, but I'm glad when they're at mine." Well, I would like to ask you to think about your family. Just picture it for a moment. I want you to picture some of us who are a little older. We're really thinking of two families. We're thinking of the family of origin in which we were raised. I have a father who's still living. My mother's been gone for a little over 10 years. I have an older brother, and I have two older sisters. I'm thinking of that family. I'm also thinking of the family that started on the day that Dawn and I became married. It's a family in which there's Dawn and Steve, and then our kids, Brianna and Sage and Reese. I'm going to ask you to think about your family or families. And hear again the words that Jesus spoke to his disciple. Picture your families as you hear this word. "Why do you notice the speck of sawdust that is in your brother's eye when you have a log in your own? Why do you notice the little tiny speck in your brother's eye when you have a log in your own?" It's a great question. This morning, I would like to ask you to think with me about this issue called judgment and the things that come out of our judgments of one another, our blaming and our shaming, and sadly, sometimes our maiming of one another that takes place because of this thing called judgment. Jesus asked his disciples, "Why do you notice the speck that is in your brother's eye, and you are unaware of the log in your own? It's a wonderful, wonderful question. Why do we? It has been going on forever, I think. In the Bible's story, it's been going on since the story of Adam and Eve. You all remember the very first bit of shaming that took place and blaming that took place. Adam and Eve were in the garden. Everything was as it was intended to be. We know the story that Eve took the fruit from the forbidden tree. Humankind began its journey of rebellion against God on that particular day. Adam followed shortly after. He also took from the fruit of the forbidden tree. They had been naked and unashamed, and now that they've taken the fruit of the forbidden tree, they must clothe themselves because they're ashamed. And God asks Adam the rhetorical question, "Adam, why are you clothed?" I think God already knows the answer. "Have you taken the fruit from the tree that I told you not to take?" And Adam says, the first of trillions of times that these words would be spoken, "That woman you gave me." And it's been going on ever since. This business of noting what is wrong with my brother or my sister or my husband or my wife or my children, and I think you see where all this goes. Why is it that I notice the speck that is in their eye and I don't even notice the log that is growing in my own? We've been looking at one of the stories, one of the families in the Bible, one of the many, many families. This particular family is the family headed by Isaac and Rebekah and their sons Esau and Jacob. This is an extraordinary family because they're a family of promise. These are the descendants of Abraham and Sarah, of whom God said they will be a blessing to all of the earth. And it is in this family that when Esau and Jacob, these twin brothers, are born, Esau just minutes ahead of Jacob, that their contention with one another would begin from the very, very start, as we've been seeing throughout this series. And mom and dad enter into the problem on the day they're born or shortly after when the scripture says, Isaac loved Esau, and Rebekah loved Jacob. And you can't do that unless you have pronounced a judgment on the other. I wonder what the conversations in that home were like. I wonder if Rebekah ever said, "Esau, why can't you be like your brother? He cleans up his bedroom. He takes care of things. Why can't you be more like your brother?" And I wonder if Dad Isaac would stand over here and say, "Jacob, why can't you be like your brother? He goes out in the fields and he hunts and he brings home the things that we need, and you just stay here all the time." And this judging and this blaming took place in this family apparently from the very beginning. Here's this family of promise, promised through Abraham and Sarah, who are as dysfunctional as us. And their dysfunction rises to that horrific day when Rebekah will team up with her son Jacob, and her husband Isaac is old now, his sight is blind. The time has come for him to give his blessing to his oldest son. And instead of allowing all of that to happen, Rebekah enters into a conspiracy, and she puts Jacob in the place where Esau was supposed to be, and she clothes him with animal fur so that her husband will think this is Esau. And so her husband Isaac gives the blessing that was intended for the oldest to the youngest instead. And this deception and this deceit just goes on and on and on, and this poison in the well. And, well, it seems to have begun when the book of Genesis says, Isaac loved Esau, and Rebekah loved Jacob, and the judgments began. Why is it, Jesus asked, why is it that you notice the speck that is in your brother's eye, and you do nothing about the log that is in your own? Sometimes I wonder what it would be like if a person from another planet, somebody who is totally neutral and objective, came to our planet and just observed life around us on a daily basis. I have no doubt that they would see a number of really beautiful things. Somebody totally objective and neutral would see many beautiful things. They would probably wonder at the beauty of romantic love. Oh, that's a wonderful thing. And they would probably marvel at the love for which parents have for their children, and they would marvel at the kinds of commitments that we're capable of making to one another. I have no doubt that they would see a whole bunch of beautiful, beautiful things. But I also think that a visitor from another planet who came to observe our families would probably be beside themselves about some of the things that we do to one another. How is it, they would wonder, how is it that that human beings can be so proficient at noticing what is wrong with one another when they've got the same things going on in themselves? It's really remarkable. How is it that a teenager can say to their mom or their dad, how can you be so controlling? How can you constantly, constantly be so controlling? And then turn and walk away and say to their younger sibling who happens to be in the way, get out of my way. How can they do this? I think a visitor from another planet who observed our interactions and our relations with one another would marvel at, well, we all have a PhD in noticing what's wrong with everybody else, while we have an absolute blindside to our own. It is astonishing. How is it that a husband can say to his wife, you always have to get the last word. Why is it that you always have to get the last word? Even as he turns and slams the door behind, having just spoken the last word. How is it that we do this to one another? How is it that we blame and we shame and we notice and we observe and we make note of all the things that are wrong with other people while not noticing the things about ourselves? I was at an Alma High School basketball game a few years ago, and I was seated next to a friend on my right, and about 3 feet down from me, there was a man seated over here who I didn't really know. I just recognized him as someone who lived in our community. I didn't really know him. We'd been watching the game, and then there was a break in the game, and there was a person who was walking across on the side of the court during a break in the game who was carrying a hot dog. And as they were walking across the side of the court, this person who could have stood to lose a few pounds was walking across carrying the hot dog, and the fellow who was sitting 3 or 4 seats down from me said, well, that guy looks like he's had a few too many hot dogs already, doesn't he? And I think it was an effort at humor. But I wondered, how is it that we are so good at noticing the faults and the qualms and the problems of other people while we are so poor at noticing our own? Think of the visitor to our land from another planet. Picture them again for just a moment. Picture this person as they observe things that happen in families. The ways that we form alliances. Two people come together in their agreement that somebody else is the problem, and it happens all the time, not just in families. Goodness, nations do the same thing. Two people who agree with one another that somebody else is the problem, and all of a sudden they've got a nice little alliance that is going on. Husbands and wives who have the same arguments with one another year after year after year after year, each of them mastering the techniques of noticing what is wrong with the other while not recognizing their own contribution to the situation. Parents who resort to the same kind of criticizing and screaming at their children year after year after year after year, not noticing that their screaming and their criticizing of their children might actually be contributing to the problems that their children are bringing to the table. How is it, Jesus asks, how is it that you can notice the speck that is in your neighbor, your brother's eye, and not notice the log that is in your own? It is a great, great question. Well, I love this little story about an older couple who had breakfast together every day. Every day they would go down into their kitchen and they would sit down and they would have breakfast together. And there was a younger couple that moved in next door. It just so happened that their kitchen window looked right out over the backyard of this younger couple that had moved in right next door. And every day the younger couple hung their laundry out over the clothesline. And so each day, the older couple would sit down and they would look out over the clothesline and the clothes that were hanging on the line, and the older man would say, somebody needs to teach that young lady how to do the laundry. I mean, just look at that. Those clothes are dingy and the whites aren't white and the brights aren't bright. Somebody needs to teach that girl how to do the laundry. The next morning, they came down and the older man would say to his wife, somebody's got to tell that girl how to do the laundry. Look at that. The laundry's awful. Somebody's got to teach her how to use bleach on the whites, and somebody's got to teach her how to brighten the brights. Look at that terrible laundry out there. This went on day after day, week after week, until one day, this older couple came down and they sat down at the table and they looked out the window and he said, hey, somebody finally taught that girl how to do the laundry. Look how white the whites are and look how bright the brights are. And his wife said, I washed the windows yesterday. You see, this is actually precisely what Jesus is doing with his disciples. Notice again his words. Why do you notice the speck of sawdust in your neighbor's eye when you have a log that is growing from your own? Notice what he said. First, take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly, by the way, not to judge your neighbor, then you will see clearly to help your neighbor. First, begin with taking the log out of your own eye, or if I could switch the metaphors, begin by washing your own windows. And once you've taken care of yourself, then you will see clearly about how to be really, genuinely, truly helpful to one another. Friends, don't look now, but the great switcheroo has just taken place. Jesus has just switched things around on us. We who have spent most of our lives learning how to point at you and you and you and you and you, Jesus has just turned it around and has told us to point at me. I wonder how it is that I might be contributing to this problem that I'm having in this relationship. I wonder what it is that I might be doing that is contributing to this challenge or this problem. I wonder. Do you see the switch that has taken place? Not, oh, there are 10,000 ways that I can point out what you're doing. No. I wonder what it is that I am doing to contribute to the problem that we're having. You see, we've returned to the principle that we worked with last Sunday, the very same principle looked at from a slightly different perspective, and that is the only person that I can directly influence is me. The only person whose attitudes and actions that I can directly influence is me. And as I do, as I influence my own attitudes and my own actions, then indirectly, I may come to have a very good impact on you, but it only takes place if I put my energies into my attitudes and my actions and the changes that I need to make. I want to ask you to picture with me a great big mobile. I want you to imagine there's a great big mobile hanging up here. A mobile is one of those things that hangs over a baby's crib, you know, that the baby reaches up and it hits maybe a little duck and the duck starts wobbling this way, and then other parts of the mobile above the baby's crib start doing different things. I want you to imagine a great big mobile that is hanging down, and because we're in church, let's say the characters that are hanging down are angels, little angels that are hanging down. There's a big circle that binds them all together. It's hanging from the ceiling. And imagine that I step over here and I see one of these angels and I reach up and I just tap it a little bit and it starts moving a little bit back and forth. And as I do, because everything is connected to everything else in this mobile, there's another angel over on this side that starts going around and around. And as it goes around and around, there's another one over on this side that starts going up and down, and each of them doing something slightly different. And what I'm asking you to imagine is a system in which everything is connected so that everybody's behavior is contributing to everybody else's. And if you can picture that mobile, I think you're looking now at your family. Everybody is connected. And everybody is connected in ways that we are mutually reconfirming and reaffirming what everybody else is doing, so that this one's bouncing is contributing to this one's spinning, and this one's spinning is returning is contributing to this one's bouncing. And now, as you stay with this picture of the mobile, as you imagine it hanging up here, suppose that one part changed what it was doing. Suppose that this part over here that has been bouncing up and down decides that that is not helpful, and it begins instead to spin ever so slightly. It puts all of its energies into changing what it is doing. The only one that it can directly influence is itself. But over time, it begins to have an effect on this one and this one and this one and this one. And friends, I think we have here a beautiful picture of the way families work. The only person whose attitudes and actions I can directly influence is me. Now, you're thinking to yourself, Pastor Steve, that sounds all nice and good, but you don't know my family. And I want to say, okay, you don't know mine either. Where does the courage to stop looking at what is wrong with my brother or sister or husband or wife or father or mother or aunt or uncle, Where does the courage to stop judging and blaming and shaming and instead put my energies into my own ways that I am contributing to the problem and recognizing those? Where does the courage to do this come from? And friends, here's where I want to say, it is so important that we recognize that the speaker of these words is Jesus. It's not me. I am not the one who originated these words. The one who originated these words was Jesus. Let me tell you a little bit about his story. Let me tell you a little bit about his people's story. Long before Jesus, there was this practice called the Day of Atonement that took place among the Hebrew people. Later, they became known as the Jewish people. On the Day of Atonement, the priest, the high priest over all of Israel, would go into the temple, to the Holy of Holies, and the high priest would take two goats. And one of these goats would be slaughtered as a sin offering for the sins of the people. And the other goat, the high priest would lay his hands on the head of the other goat and ritually transfer the sins of all of the people onto this goat. This was called the scapegoat. When the high priest had ritually placed his hands on the head of this other goat, transferring the sins of all of the people onto this goat, then this goat would be sent off into the wilderness, never again to return to these people. This was a powerful symbolic picture called the scapegoat. And you know, the truth is, what we've been talking about this morning, scapegoating is what we do with extraordinary, extraordinary capabilities. We, unwilling to acknowledge our own contributions to the problems and unwilling to face what is within ourselves, we will find every fault with other people around us. And we will blame it and we will shame it and we will maim it and we will transfer what is in us onto other people. And we do it all the time and we scapegoat people all of the time. We do it in our families and we do it in our churches and we do it in our countries and we do it in the world where this guilt, this stuff that I have that is unresolved, these dark places in this life, the shadow side of who I am, my sinfulness, is transferred to other people, and then in our judgment and our blaming and our shaming, we contribute to the dysfunctions of our families generation after generation after generation after generation. And that is why it is so important to recognize that the speaker of these words is Jesus, because of his own volition, Jesus became the scapegoat on our behalf so that our sin is transferred to him, so that our guilt is transferred to him, so that our darkness is transferred to Jesus. And when we understand this, when we, more than that, when we experience the grace of God in Jesus, then we are free to acknowledge that within ourselves of which we are ashamed, and our own contributions to our problems, and the ways that we are part of the problem. You see, I don't have to run and hide any longer when the one to whom I admit my failure is the one who gave himself for me. I can be courageous when I recognize that what meets me at the bottom is grace, God's grace in the person of Jesus. So, let's picture what this might look like, shall we? I'm making these situations up, so bear with me, if you will. Jesus has returned to us responsibility for ourselves, the only person whom I can directly influence, the only person whose attitudes and actions that I can directly influence is my own. Jesus has just returned responsibility to me. Let's picture what that might look like in our families. Let's imagine some parents who have a son or a daughter who is old enough to know better. But every day this son or this daughter goes out into the cold without wearing their coat. They're old enough to know better. They're not 2 or 3 years old. Let's say this is a teenager. Every day, it's February, it's freezing outside, and Johnny is going out without a coat. And mom or dad is absolutely fit to be tied. That kid is so irresponsible. What is that kid what's going to need to happen for that kid to finally straighten out his problems? Now notice what mom or dad is doing in this situation is blaming little Johnny for going out every day without wearing his coat, without recognizing their own contribution to the problem. You see, mom or dad, every day, as Johnny leaves, says, "Johnny, don't forget to take your coat." Every day. Johnny starts to step outside. He grabs Johnny, says, "Hey, don't forget to take your coat." Some days, grabs the coat and puts it on Johnny as Johnny heads out the door, even though, you know, he's 19 years old. Let's imagine in this made-up situation that one day mom or dad pauses to ask, "How is it that I'm contributing to this problem?" And instead of just blaming Johnny for being irresponsible, they go, "You know, I have been awfully anxious about Johnny and about Johnny being cold. And maybe because I'm so stinking anxious about Johnny being cold, he doesn't need to be anxious for himself. And I have been telling him every day for 15 years to put his coat on, reminding him on the way out the door, that's the part that I've been doing. Maybe I just need to keep my little mouth quiet." And so one day as Johnny goes out the door, mom or dad bites their lip and refuses to say anything. And at the end of the day, Johnny comes back and says, "Why didn't you say something? I froze today." But the next day, mom or dad doesn't say anything, and Johnny goes out without a coat. And I don't know, the third day or the fourth day or the fifth day, Johnny goes to the closet and pulls his coat on and steps outside to go to school. You see, mom or dad has put their energy and their influence into changing themselves directly. And indirectly, it comes to have an influence over time upon their son or their daughter. Let's imagine a really tough one. Let's imagine adult parents who have an adult son who has become an alcoholic, and his alcoholism is consuming him. It is destroying him at work, and it's destroying his family, and it's eating him up. And day after day after day after day, mom and dad complain about their son's irresponsibility, the problem with that kid, and what's it going to take? And one day, let's imagine that mom and dad have the courage to have the hard conversation with one another. How is it that we might be contributing to this problem? And let's imagine in this situation that mom or dad have been paying Johnny. I don't know. We're going to stick with Johnny, though. Let's imagine mom or dad finally have the courage to ask, why is it that we're paying Johnny's bills? And why is it now for the 12th time in a row? We've paid off one of his bills because our son is an alcoholic and he isn't doing what he needs to do for himself. And let's imagine that this mom or this dad have the courage to go to a group like Al-Anon where they talk with other parents who have a very similar problem, and they find the encouragement and the equipping they need not to change their son but to change themselves. Folks, it's powerfully difficult. It is so hard. The reasons we judge one another is that judging one another is so much easier than changing our own attitudes and our own actions. Let's imagine one more scenario. Let's imagine a marriage in which, again, I assure you, I am making this up. I promise that I am. But let's imagine a marriage when, let's not be stereotypical, the husband is constantly nagging his wife, constantly. He nags her every day. I come home from work and you haven't done the dishes. I come home from work and you haven't done this. I come home from work and you haven't done this. He nags and nags and nags and nags every day. He blames her for everything. And one day, let's just imagine this husband has the courage to ask, I wonder how it is that I contribute to this problem. And he comes to realize that his nagging might be an exact reason that his wife wants to pull away and do the opposite of what it is that he says. And so one day he has the courage to change his nagging into polite requesting and respecting her differentness and that she is free to choose what she wants to do. Do you see where this goes? Jesus said, "Why do you recognize the speck of sawdust in your neighbor's eye? When you have a plank in your own, first take the plank out of your own eyes, and then you will see clearly to help your brother with the speck that is in her own." Well, this morning I want to say it is very important when you hear these words of Jesus and this particular message, it's very important that you not turn this around to say, well, I must be the problem with everything that's wrong with my family. It's all because of me. There are a handful of people who will go to the opposite end, I believe, of what Jesus intended on this, and they'll say, well, everything in the family is my fault. Please know that was not the intent of these words, nor is that the intent of this message. The intent is to recognize that we all play a role, we're all doing a part, and the only person whom I can directly or immediately change is me. You see, we're all broken, and we're all wounded. If we're honest, if we really take a look inward, if we have the courage to reach down and take off the manhole cover and look at what is deep down inside of us, we all see there are a whole bunch of gremlins down there that are very, very painful to notice. Why is it that I am so reactive? Why is it that I am so judgmental? Why is it that I am so insecure? Why is it that I become angry so quickly? We take the manhole cover off and we begin to notice all kinds of darkness down there that we'd really rather not have to deal with. But friends, here's the problem. If we don't take the manhole cover off and have the courage to say, how is it that I am a contributor to the problems around me? If we don't have the courage to do that, to the degree that we keep all of that covered up, is the degree that we will act out judgmentalism in greater and greater and greater ways. And let me just say, I believe the most horrific acts of evil and hatefulness are done by those who do not have the courage to see what is going on inside themselves. Let me just say some names. Hitler, Pol Pot, the Ku Klux Klan, those who could not pull off that cover and look at what is inside of them and the ways that they are contributing to the problem. We are all broken. We are all contributing. We are all sinners. But by the grace of God, we can look at the man or the woman in the mirror and own up to our contributions to the problem. And we can invest our energies in the only one whom we can directly influence, which is me. Would you look forward carefully, please, and observe the man or woman in the mirror?